Hello and welcome to the history of Bangalore. I am your host, Ramji Chandran, and today we will look at the origins of the name of the city. For all its pizzazz, there is much that we don't know about Bangalore. To begin with, the most basic thing, its name. Now, I'm not talking about Bangalore and Bengaluru. Bengaluru is the original name, and both names are now a part of our heritage and our history. But I am talking about their origin. In today's episode, we will look at how Bangalore might have come to its name, and how the chance discovery of an inscription stone changed so much about what we assumed was the story behind its name. But before I dive into the episode, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the Prestige Group for their support in making this happen. Building cities one landmark at a time, they transform dreams into reality. You can be a part of the future. Simply add prestige to your life. And now, to the eternal mystery of how Bangalore got its name.
ಶ್ರೀಮತ್ ನಾಗತ್ತರನ ಮನೆ ಒಗತಿಂ ಪೇರೊಣ್ಣ ಶೆಟ್ಟಿ ಬೆಂಗಳೂರು ಕಾಳಗದೋಳ್ ನಾಗತ್ತರನ ಮಗನ್ ಬುಟ್ಟಣ್ಣ ಪತಿ ಸತ್ತನ್.
What you just heard was Bangalorean inscription hunter P.L. Uday Kumar reading from an inscription stone carved in Old Kannada or Hale Kannada and dates back to the year 890 AD or so. And it translates to this. Nagathara's house son Peramanasetti and his son Buttanapatti died in the battle for Bangalore. That's what it says. This sort of inscription stone is what is known as a Veeragallu, or literally a hero stone. Hero stones were carved to honor those who died fighting for their land, their property, or their masters. In this case, it records the heroic deaths of two of the local chieftain Nagathara's family. One was his son Buttanapatti, and the other was referred to as a Manevaga or Manemaga in present-day Kannada, a term that literally means house son. I imagine one of the all-purpose members of the household staff, not exactly family, but one who was born unto the house and grew up and lived among the biological children. Traditionally, this was a hereditary position, and generations of Manevagas are born unto the house. We know about Nagathara from our last episode, and if you missed the reference, Nagathara was a local chieftain of the broad area surrounding Begur, I estimate about a 10-kilometer radius, and a man of great importance in the area. Some of his contributions to the land are still visible, but we will come back to that. There are hundreds, maybe thousands, of Veeragallus scattered across the lands of the southern empires, honoring the many people of note who died in the line of duty. But there are two matters of significance that consider our particular stone. The first and the main one is the reference to the name Bengalura. Now, from the paleography concerning Nagathara, the stone can be placed as having been carved sometime between 850 and 900 AD. The second point of interest is the reference to a battle for Bengaluru. Where was this Bengaluru that the stone refers to, and why was it so important that a battle was fought there, killing Nagathara's sons? But in this episode, we will focus on the origin of the name Bengaluru and the many theories that have blossomed around it. For many years, there was an interesting story explaining the origin of the name of the city. According to folklore, the king Birabalala was traipsing through the forest and got separated from the rest of the people in his entourage or hunting pack, and he got lost in the thick forest. After riding around for a considerable amount of time and not finding his bearings, he stopped and rested. The legend has it that the king was tired and very hungry, but there was nothing to eat and no place from where he could forage for food. Then suddenly, he spotted a lonely hut and approached it. The occupant of this hut was an old woman who looked curiously but kindly upon the disheveled and anxious man. She invited him into her hut and offered him all that she could rustle up to eat, a bowl of boiled beans. That's what she fed him. But boiled beans for a hungry king would have become quite literally the feast for the king. The legend says that the king was so touched by this gesture that he named the place after the dish. The dish would be called Bindakalu, or boiled beans, and so it is said that he named the place Bindakaluru, or the town of the boiled beans. And twisting Bindakaluru into Bengaluru is but a small step of phonology. The romance of the story caught everyone's fancy. The story even made it into an early volume of Epigraphia Karnataka, Mysore, published around the turn of the 19th century, around 1885 or 1887, under the authorship of the first director of the Department of Archaeology, Benjamin Lewis Rice. But sometime before 1915, a few years after Rice had retired and gone back to England in 1906, the man who took over from Rice, R. Narasimha Char, a highly regarded epigraphist, was visiting the Nageshwara temple in Begur to spend some time looking at the many inscriptions on the walls of the temples. Walking around the temple complex, and while in front of the Kamateshwara shrine, he felt something unusual under his feet, and he chanced upon an inscription stone. Narasimha Char writes that the stone was embedded in the floor of the temple. In all likelihood, this important inscription stone was being used as paving, like a flagstone used to replace another that may have cracked, probably by some unaware or illiterate workmen. And carved on the stone, Narasimha Char must have been astonished, and not by a little, to discover mention of the word Bengaluru. He recovered the stone and began a study of the writing on it. This process is called paleography. Paleography is the study of ancient or historical writing, particularly found in manuscripts and inscriptions, and it involves dating documents based on their script, their language, their style, and their historical context. It's the paleography that dates the Begur stone to around 900 AD or just before, but the discovery changed everything. The Veerabalala referred to in the boiled beans legend was likely Veerabalala II, a Hoysala king who ruled from the year 1173 to 1220 AD. But that was some 275 years after the appearance of the word Bengaluru on the inscription stone in Begur. Now, I found this in a 1916 annual report of the Mysore Kingdom titled Archaeological Researches in Mysore during the year 1914-1915, referring to Narasimha Char's travel when he found the stone. Narasimha Char writes about the stone he discovered. The present inscription is of considerable interest as it testifies incidentally to the antiquity of Bengaluru, the modern Bangalore, which must have existed under this name from about AD 900. We may now discard the story of Veerabalala having gone to the hut of an old woman and eaten boiled beans offered by her. This means the story of Veerabalala and the Bindakalu was nothing but urban legend or some fanciful forest fantasy and end of story. Or was it? Interestingly, even today, almost 110 years after Narasimha Char published his findings to the contrary, the boiled beans yarn remains the story of choice for Bangaloreans to explain the origins of the name of their city. And building upon that, later adaptations have resulted in urban chic variations such as Bean Town and other imaginations. Apparently, this desire to hang on to a more romantic version of the story is not a new thing. In his essay, Place Names of Mysore, published by the Mythic Society in 1915, historian Hayavadana Rao, and there's a road named after him at Basavangudi, said in a speech where he read out this essay, "Nobody is anxious, I think, to disturb the somewhat romantic story which makes it mean the city of beans. He was suggesting that the reason for this is that people want an exotic or even a royal association with the name of their city. In this case, the King Veerabalala. Maybe to illustrate his apparent frustration with folklore muscling into the territory of history, Rao goes on to offer an alternate theory for the origin of the name, and this is Benda Karduru, the city of the burnt forest, or a city built on a new clearing after burning down the vegetation, I would guess. Although Rao's suggestion has found its way into popular and amateur efforts at explaining the origins of the name, I submit that it should be taken as his stab at being funny. Remember that Rao said these words while presenting this paper in a speech that he was making, and therefore, it is likely that he would have wanted to draw a laugh or two from a rather erudite and august audience at the Mythic Society. Indeed, he went on to say, "This derivation, I suggest, only as a possible one. I don't say I have found any evidence for it apart from phonology. But phonology, as you might have inferred from what I have stated so far, is no proper guide in these matters. But phonology appears to have influenced many people in their theories of how the name Bengaluru came to being. The historian T.V. Annaswamy, in his book Bengaluru to Bangalore, has devoted a whole section to this. Here are some of the theories that he quoted. Bengaluru, where he quotes the civil servant Masti Vengadesh Iyengar from his essay on place names, saying that the name Bengaluru probably came from the village of Bengala,
a theory supported by some inscriptions.
And then there's Bengavaluru, the city of bodyguards. Now, there's a strong reason why this could be a plausible theory. And then there's Benda Kalluuru, the city of heated stones. And this draws from some story that ascetics and sages used to perform penance on heated stones in the neighborhood. And there's Bengaluru, from the Benga tree. The botanical name of the Benga tree is Pterocarpus marsupium, commonly known as the Indian kino tree, used in Ayurvedic medicine and said to treat diabetes. But the name association with Bengaluru has less to do with diabetes and more to do with the phonology of Benga sounding like it might inspire Bengaluru. And now this is as far-fetched as it sounds, and certainly not a theory on which we can hang our hats. The common thread running through all these possible suggestions is that they all come together only in phonology. These are words which, when the suffix uru is made, morphs closer to Bengaluru. To be fair, if there was a village called Bengaluru, the question can be asked about what inspired that name in the first place, and could it have been any of these? But there's little point even discussing that probability because of the total absence of any other evidence. Now, normally, before something can be taken as a fact in the absence of incontrovertible evidence, that is, something that offers hard proof right away, historians gather all the evidence that they can find and see how many boxes it checks. In the interest of getting things right, in our case, historical accuracy about Bengaluru's name, different sources might be explored to understand how a name may have come about or changed over time. Sources like documents, coins, inscriptions, any other old items. And with any luck, the evidence from these sources would support or reject the initial ideas or theories. Even if it seems that there is some attendant or associated evidence, it would be considered as evidence to go after a fact. But in the case of the name Bengaluru, even the associated evidence is minimal. Other than the appearance of the name on a couple of inscriptions, there isn't much else that mentions Bengaluru. For example, there are no minted coins that mention Bengaluru. Sometimes you notice things by the availability of proof on similar things and you use that as a benchmark. So the question is there any evidence that places nearby had coins with their names mentioned on it? And the answer is yes. Nearby places such as Balapur, Chikbalapur, Devanahalli, Nandi, Hoskote, and Kunigal, all of these places have coins with their names on them. The Kunigal stones, for example, are said to have been minted by Kempe Gowda himself. For Bangalore, nothing. Since there aren't any coins and only two inscriptions about Bengaluru, historians have to carefully sift through historical documents to find out where the name really comes from, and indeed, if they can find it at all. And as Hayavardhana Rao said, the most satisfactory derivation of a place name from a phonological point of view may not be, and in my opinion, ought not to be, regarded as either accurate or final until we have made it pass through the crucible of a more exacting scientific test. So where does that leave us? Happy in the knowledge that while we don't know exactly what inspired the name Bengaluru, or even where this Bengaluru was originally, we do know that it existed and that it was important enough for an army from Nagathara to have fought and defended it at a great cost to himself. As for the fanciful imaginations of the name Bengaluru, that's what they will remain, fanciful imaginations, until it is passed through Hayavardhana Rao's crucible of exacting science. Coming up right now after the break, P.L. Uday Kumar. Stay tuned.
Prestige Group brings to you its latest launch, Prestige Somerville. Lake-facing 3 and 4 bed apartments on Maratahalli, Whitefield Road. For more details, call 85489-85489. Project is RERA approved.
In 1874, Benjamin Lewis Rice started his project to document what he found on inscription stones, resulting in the 12-volume Epigraphia Carnatica, a record of 9,000 inscriptions that he found across the Mysore Kingdom and Coorg. It's the only real record of the early history of Bangalore and the area. For almost 150 years, Rice's Epigraphia has received no attention and has fallen from general public view, except among academicians. Until now, when my guest P.L. Uday Kumar, along with the Mythic Society in Bangalore, started to follow Rice's footsteps and has created the new Epigraphia in digital form. His project finds and records inscriptions using methods such as 3D imaging. And his effort is visible to anyone in various forms, including a Google map, where you can become astonished as to how close you are to a stone from history. Uday is erudite and inclusive and uniquely believes in bringing everything that he does to public access. Uday, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Been called many things, but not erudite. That's the first time for me. Thank you.
Well, it's one way to look at recent history. You know, you can't do research on early Bangalore without running into the name of Nagathara several times. Break him down for me. What do you know about him?
Yeah. So this man, Nagathara, is like, is a big source of history. There's over about 10 inscriptions that include his name in various ways.
What built his reputation?
What was so famous about him was that, Beguru was a very important place at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a small location of any sorts. It was a significant place in the Gangavadi kingdom.
Yeah, he was a feudatory of the Gangas.
Right, that's right. And the dynasty also ruled the longest.
6-7 centuries?
For about 700 years.
Right, yes.
Right. So Nagathara seems to have been absolutely a hero there, accomplishing many things.
Right.
One of which, which today we can kind of even see, touch and feel, is the temple where the stone, inscription stone stands.
In Begur.
The Nageshwara temple there, the Begur temple complex. One of the temples is actually built by him. And there's an inscription there saying that as much. So, when you feel, when you accomplish something, you obviously think that it's thanks to God, and you want to, in gratitude, you want to do something. And he built that magnificent temple.
That's one of his doers.
Okay, that's one.
Right.
And like you mentioned, his two sons here, they died in battle, and because this man's well known, so he kind of had a memorial stone put up in their honor. There's one more there, which is his son-in-law's. The son-in-law also has given up his life. Now, this is self-sacrifice. This is not in battle. So self-sacrifice is also a very honorable way to serve society.
How so, exactly?
Maybe there was a calamity that struck at that time. Maybe it was plague. Maybe it was smallpox, chickenpox.
Right.
Maybe there was cattle disease. There was drought or something of that type. And those were usual situations where people took a vow to say, I'll sacrifice myself if this calamity is
right.
Resolved. Right. So his son-in-law dies that way, and there's a depiction of his death both sculpturally and in written form at the same temple.
And these things are available for anyone to go take a look, correct?
All of them are absolutely available to view, touch, feel as well.
And Begur is a very well-known location, isn't it?
Oh, it's very, very well-known place in Bangalore, except we don't recognize it by that name. It's more popularly known as the famous or the infamous Silk Road Junction.
Oh, yes. Traffic is pretty light over there. And a short step away is a trove of history.
It's about three kilometers away. From there is Begur, and there's another way. Also, the place is very well known. Mm-hmm. It's electronic city is essentially built on lands of Begur,
and so it goes. Well, thank you for your views on Nagatara and Begur, and let's get you back on the show.
Thank you very much. It's a lovely discussion.
And now I'm honored to welcome back to the show historian S.K. Haruni. He is the author of Bengaluru Parampare, or Bangalore's Heritage, subtitled New Perspective on Historical Research. The chapter on Begur in his book is possibly the most comprehensive source of history about Begur there is. Welcome back, Dr. Haruni.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You were listening to my segment on place names. Did you agree with the conclusion or lack of conclusion?
Yes, I agree with most of the things we have covered. It. Derivation we have looked on, I agree with.
Thank you. Now to a couple of questions on the Begur stone. In your book, Bengaluru Parampare, on the chapter in Begur, you spoke about the Begur stone that mentions Bengaluru, but you also mentioned, you quoted a scholar called Karthik, who suggested that there was a different interpretation to the manner of death of one of the two sons.
Yes,
I think the word that was to be used was stabbing, or the interpretation of that.
Yeah, you're right. It is a stabbing.
Does that materially change anything that we know about the story itself?
It is a significant, but it does not change the concept or the episode of the fight. It's a matter of how he died. He died by stabbing. That's all.
Ah, that was the context that you made.
That's the context of it.
I'd like to discuss the name Nagatara in a later inscription stone, which Nagatara commemorates the death of Nagatara in a battle.
Yes.
The Ganga king Ereyappa was pleased and gave the local chieftainship to Iruga, Nagatara's son.
His son, yes.
The inscription stone says that Ereyappa was binding the Nagatara crown on Iruga. So was Nagatara a person or a title?
Yes, sir. That's true, sir. So far, we thought that Nagatara is a person name. But recent study by Karthik and others, the name of the Nagatara appears not only one inscription, there are several inscriptions from Bangalore and, Begur, and also some other places surrounding Begur area. It showed that even there is a Nagatara, name of the Nagatara comes in different places. So, possibly that is a, Naga is a, it is a, for the elephant we use it. Like a Ravutas, Nagatara could be the one designation or the post of the own service. This could be one possible. However, there is also, opinion that Nagatara is also a personal name. But both we can take it as them, because we have to restudy all of the inscriptions together. And there is also possibilities of name as well as the designations.
So, more work on the same thing?
Yes. Yeah, that is true, sir. It's ever-ending research, that is true.
Keeps one busy, I guess. Now, before I let you go, I made the point in the episode that it's almost impossible to determine where that Bengaluru was that was referred to on the stone,
yes,
where these two gentlemen gave up their lives. But you had a rather extended view on that subject.
Yes, interestingly, sir, the name of the inscription, a Begur inscription refers to the Bengaluru Kalaga. Of course, now we are the part of the Begur and Bengaluru part of the Bengaluru's extended city. Local people, they refer that Bengaluru name, which is referred in the inscription, belongs to refers to the Begur itself. However, we have no idea, but you know, those who have found inscriptions like, you know, P.L. Rice and others, the opinion that inscriptions refers to the Begur as well as the Bangalore. So my opinion, personal opinion, I agree with the you know, name of the Bengaluru could have been the derivation of the Bengaluru, because Madiwala inscription also talks refers to the name place Bengaluru as a Bengaluru.
Those would be the Tamil inscription.
Tamil inscription, sir. Yeah, this is what I you know agree with the most of the Tamil as well as the Kannada inscriptions refers to the name place of the Bengaluru, sir.
So that would be Masti Venkatesh Iyengar's theory about Bengala. But where was it?
It is very difficult to locate. It could be near the present Bengaluru, what you know, old Bengaluru we call it. So that could be the place where the original Bengaluru could have been there.
And what about the theory that Hale Bengaluru was near Kodige Halli?
That I differ from the many scholars, because we have no evidence to prove it, sir.
Yeah, with so much of what we know of early history, isn't it?
Yes.
So it remains a mystery.
Yeah, mystery.
So while we'll have to end this episode now, I'd love to speak at length with you about Begur in my next episode.
Certainly, sir. Glad.
As always, wonderful to talk to you, Dr. Aruni.
Thank you very much.
In 1537, when Kempe Gowda was building a new city, he decided to name it Bengaluru. Now, we already know that there has been a Bengaluru referred to in that inscription we talked about today for about 600 years before him. There are some theories that he named this place Bengaluru because his wife came from a village called Hale Bengaluru, which is in Kodige Halli. It's near Yalahanka. It's off to the left of the new airport road. But not all scholars accept this theory, and therefore, how Bengaluru got its name, and indeed where it was even, will remain a mystery for historians, present and future, to solve. Coming up in our next episode, it's all about a town that has been important for centuries as a center for trade, for commerce, for religion, and one that has been an example of architecture and provided lessons in water management and planning. And not the least because of the story of a woman who stood up to orthodoxy and pressure and set the stage for social reform and women's rights. And all this was back in the 19th century. Coming up next, the historical importance of Begur. Binge it. I am Ramji Chandran, and this is the History of Bangalore.